Good day, America. This is Eugene B. Colson with the radio show Mind Controlled America. This show is about mind control, the UFO phenomenon, crimes that the government has committed in the past against its citizens, and I have a guest on the show today. AJ, are you there?
I am here.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, AJ?
Well, these days I mostly just make TV commercials, but back in 1980, I enlisted in the Marine Corps after high school, and there I met a fellow by the name of Joshua, and we became lifelong friends. I was injured during training, and Josh went on into the military intelligence community, and we remained friends. And somewhere around 1992, I found out that Josh was bodyguarding a person that he described as an extraterrestrial. He never used that word. He just described him. So I have written a book.
How would you describe the extraterrestrial?
I met him only once. Josh had been injured many times in the early 80s, and he had had many blood transfusions and had contracted AIDS from those blood transfusions. And when he was dying, I had gone to see him unannounced. And when I arrived, there were, you know, several black U.S. SUVs out front, and I didn't think much of it, but I went on in, and the man he had been describing and called John was in there visiting with him, and that's the only time I met him, and he was a tall, lanky individual, no hair, with very tan, leathery skin. Basically a Caucasian, but he was the person that had been described for me for the previous 20 years.
And the book you wrote?
The Human Quantum Leap, which if you want to get on the same page with us and you're in front of a computer, you can just go www.gohumanleap.com.
And tell us about your book.
Well, I've been sitting on it for a long time. Even after it was written, I sat on it for over a year. I've always been kind of hesitant about these things. I started in broadcasting as a journalist. I'm rather committed to journalism. And there was never, ever really a legitimate way of writing a nonfiction journalistic book on this subject, because for the most part it had no credibility. So, a few years ago, Peter Jennings, somebody who I respect rather deeply, and had met while working in New York in '97, he was the first one to broadcast a serious journalistic piece on the UFO phenomenon. And what he broadcast was an event that had happened over Illinois, and that event had occurred in three primary places. One was Lebanon, Illinois, the other one was Shiloh, Illinois, and the other was DuPont, Illinois. And those three places are very familiar to me because I lived in two of them and I worked in the other. So not only did I have the most respected broadcast journalist alive at the time doing this very legitimate program, but he was doing it about places that I was very familiar with. So I thought maybe, seeing how he did it, that there may be now a time to let this information out.
Now, have you seen any UFOs yourself?
No, never seen a UFO. No, sorry.
Supposedly, 1 in 10 Americans has seen them and claim to see them. I know a number of people that have seen them. I've seen some. It was flying, but it was more of semi-transparent.
Josh did tell me why people see UFOs, if you're interested in that.
Oh, yeah. Very interested. Tell us. I wait with bated breath.
It has to do with the way they travel, the actual real way that spacecraft move from place to place. And it kind of works like this. There are four states of matter: solid, liquid, gas, and plasma. The fifth state of matter is what John had described as gravity-impacted matter. And essentially what it breaks down to is this. We live in dimensions 2, 3, and 4. The fourth dimension is what scientists call time, but what John called gravity, so I call it the first dimension, and we live in 2, 3, and 4. And basically, what happens is, I'm sure that people who are familiar with this phenomenon have heard the word graviton generator or gravity generating device as part of their propulsion system. And what happens is, when you come near an object that is emanating instead of pulling on gravity, the gravity wave can push a solid object out into first dimensional space, or a bubble of first dimensional space, even though it's still sitting in three-dimensional space. And so what these ships do is they turn on these generators, they create a bubble of gravity around them, and that pushes them off into first-dimensional space. And the way they travel is all gravity in the universe is connected. Every object is connected to every other object via gravity. And the level and quality of that connection is directly proportional to the mass of the object. And so they can reach out across space. They can read the magnetosphere of a planet at a great distance. And then
now,
they can look.
Is this electromagnetic as well?
No, no. They just use that as a roadmap, because when they read that electromagnetic field of a planet at a distance, they then look for it through the gravity well of the planet that they are around and orbiting. And once they find that, they target it, and then they literally fly into the planet that they're at, and they come up out of the planet that they're going to. The event is instantaneous. However,
requires
such a serious critical calculation that it's very easy to make a mistake. And what John told Josh was simply that when you see a UFO, it's usually a mistake. Something's gone wrong.
What type of generators do they use to generate the gravity propulsion?
I don't know the nature of a graviton generator. I don't know what that is. I'm not a scientist. I'm just a journalist. My master's degree is in communications, you know. And in the book, I just make it very clear to people that I am simply repeating what I've been told. I don't make any presumption of science whatsoever. And I don't tell anybody that I know what I'm talking about. I'm just simply repeating. But that's what they call it—a graviton generator.
Do scientists have a working models of that now? Maybe that can't really use propulsion that you've read or heard about.
I do not know. Okay, Josh did allude to an event where he was actually meeting John for the first time at a hangar in an air base in western United States, and it was for the test of a device, and it was silent. It made the type of maneuvers that are very typically held together as those associated with UFOs, these extreme right angles, these high speeds, and essentially maneuvering in ways that would crush a human being. So I would say that maybe they have one aspect of it, but maybe they can't generate a bubble yet. I don't know. I do know that it was told to me that even if they could generate a bubble, there wouldn't be anything that they could do with it, because in order to make one calculation, and this is how it was explained to me, in order to make one calculation for a jump of the kind that I just described, it would take all the computer power currently on planet Earth 1,000 years to make the calculation. And this is one of the things that tells us that we're how close we are moving toward the human quantum leap. By how much that path comes down, how does it go to 500 years ago, 100 years ago, to a year, how far it comes down, how far our ability advances to make such calculations is directly related to how soon we're able to join the rest of the universe.
Now, how big was the, describe the vessel that he saw when he met John for the first time.
It was skinless. It was a skeleton. It was in a star shape, and it had equipment on it. And but it didn't take any leap of the imagination to recognize that if he had put a skin on it, that it would look like a saucer. But this one was essentially a skeleton.
How big was it?
He never really said to me just how big it was. From what I remember, it wasn't particularly big. And it wasn't manned. There wasn't anybody on it. It's all remote controlled.
Did he see any of the other anti-gravity devices that people have seen, you know, like UFOs?
He never told it to me, no. If he did, he never mentioned it to me. Josh was a very unusual person to begin with, and he would never use the word alien. He would never use the word extraterrestrial. It was just a waste of time trying to pull those things out of him. And so I simply talked to him on common ground, which was the common ground that was between him and I, and that was the science. There was nothing I could do with information about aliens, so I couldn't publish it. Nobody would take me seriously. So we just focused on the science, because that was what we were both personally interested in.
What more about the science can you tell us today?
Oh, well, there's all kinds of things, really. Let's see. Is there any particular aspect that interests you yourself?
Well, no. You know, this is a subject that's totally alien to me, for lack of a better word. I'm curious, you know, because I've seen some of these things, but how it works, I don't know. I don't have a clue.
Right, right. Well, they also, you know, things about the word crop circle, very sensitive subject. It's plausible that one of these craft can create a geometric shape as it moves in and out of the gravity well. But Josh always questioned me. He said the geometric shapes would never have a right angle on them. And he said that anytime you see a straight line or a right angle, that's man-made. And he said anytime you see a perfect, completely original, never seen before a geometric shape, that could possibly be a ship moving in and out of the gravity well, having had it made a mistake in their calculations. Or maybe one of their generators wasn't working properly. Okay, so.
So for the most part, these are basically invisible to the human eye.
Anything that is impacted by gravity Anything that is, you know, gravity impacted matter is invisible to the human eye. And this particular phenomenon accounts for a great deal of what scientists call today dark matter. So it's a very real phenomenon, and the only reason that we ourselves can't see it is that, one, we do not have an object like a quasar or gravity waves out. Gravity waves are very short. They don't go a very long distance, so it's not a phenomenon we can observe up close. And we don't have the technology. Well, if we do, we're not using the technology to generate gravity on our own. But, you know, the device that they've built at CERN and other places, this might be the first step toward using gravity as a tool, okay? And it was our scientific development that caused first contact to be made, not just with the human race, but with the United States in particular. And the reason it happened is because there is a very particular type of development that these individuals look for in a rising race tells them that it's time to make first contact, because they're going to move forward within 150 to 300 years to join all of them. So they're worth observing, they're worth studying at that point. And that test is twofold. And the first test is the ability to knowingly and with purpose use subatomic structure as a tool. That's the first test. And at the same time, the development of the computer, artificial intelligence, to allow an individual race to create or make calculations that would otherwise be beyond their ability to do. And that's why individuals like John showed up. John's an anthropologist. In our science, he would be called an anthropologist. So,
how old did Josh say this John was?
It doesn't really matter, because, one, his body is a spacesuit. I mean, it's genetically engineered. And two, he can reset it anytime he wants. So it doesn't really matter how old he never talked about his age, but it really doesn't matter, because it's all, we have to keep in mind, this is all engineering-based stuff. This isn't body snatchers or anything like that. This is just all science, highly advanced science, that allows these individuals to travel to other worlds.
Well, when I was at Area 51, and if any of the listeners never heard the very first show I did on this network, I don't remember the date, in 03, that was the Gray Protection Facility, and the scientist there told me, I said, you know, when I'm looking at all these grays, I said, where'd these come from? And they told me, well, they re-engineered them from the Roswell crash, and they can make them more efficient. They're biological supercomputers, and it takes two clone fetuses and one clone 15-year-old girl to create one gray, and they almost, the final fetus turns into it with all the genetic stuff they're pumping into its body while it's gestating in the womb. And they told me that they could not duplicate the anti-gravity devices at that time. Now, and they said, I said, where did they come from? They said, well, pre-flood man, possibly pre-world man, like you've Mars. And then you've got an asteroid belt, I believe it's just beyond Mars, which a lot of people believe that was a planet that exploded. And, you know, like we're trying to do on this planet, all the nations are trying to blow up the world. That's what happened to those two planets.
I always tell, and I say this in the book, that one, I don't know anything about Roswell or Area 51. I don't say Area 51. When people ask me about Josh, I really and truly only know what he told me. And I don't, I'm not here to either confirm or deny deny any other phenomenon that has ever been described on your show or anybody else's show or in any book. From my point of view, this is strictly journalism. I'm simply reporting what I've learned. That's all.
Well, the military have you seen the stuff on the Philadelphia experiment? I believe that was in 1944, where a destroyer disappeared.
I saw the movie.
Well, there was a real experiment like that, and I wasn't born then, but I do know that they have Tesla coil generators that they can put in aircraft or other craft, and they will disappear to the human eye. It's not electronic cloaking. They will disappear. They partially go into another dimension. But the problem when they fire those up is it really messes your head and your body up. So you cannot be exposed to this for very long at all, because it could eventually kill you. Will make you go insane.
So the only thing that the original Philadelphia Experiment movie, I assume that was based on the book, where it dealt with time travel. Josh did tell me that when they make these calculations to jump between planets, that if there's something goes wrong at the beginning and they go into and out of the same gravity well that they're at, then they can go backward in time. Time is a relative thing, but the way they measure it is not the way we measure time. The way we measure time is, you know, basically how the planet goes around the sun and how many revolutions it makes per year and the position that it holds within the galaxy. But the way they measure time is by the expansion of the universe. They are able to measure that expansion instantaneously with their equipment. And so what happens is when they go in and out of a gravity well, the expansion of the universe contracts, and they can actually find themselves in a different part of the galaxy because that's where that planet was at that point in time where they came back out of the gravity well. So they do, when they do these extremely critical calculations, there has to be a perfect execution, because if something goes wrong, it's really bad. And it's theoretically possible that some of the UFOs that we see are ships that have accidentally come in and out of the same gravity well from our future.
Did he say anything about space being curved as opposed to linear?
Space is curved, but it is almost irrelevant to them because, you know, the way we've read about and learned about through our science fiction traveling or even through our science, what constitutes travel through space is not the way they travel. They find our, you know, John is here to observe us. He knows about our science fiction. So, and there's a little bit of humor associated with something like, say, the Star Trek series or Enterprise moving through space and having its engines contact some type of exotic material and igniting a star by collapsing that material with its energy discharge. And so It's very unrealistic, and it would be moving close to the speed of light or at a warp speed. It would be nearly impossible to avoid all the obstacles that are out there because the speed is so great. So it's really unrealistic to think about traveling in those aspects, but the way they have developed it is the way we will develop it.
Now, I've heard a lot of information, and some from some semi-reliable sources that the super colliders, the one they built in Texas and the one they got over in Switzerland, they're actually trying to create a stargate to travel from one gate to the next, just like on the science fiction show Stargate, sci-fi channel.
Well, there's no stargate, but, I mean, there is, if you think about if they are going to discover how to create a graviton generator, if this is the first step in learning how to do that, where they can open a gravity well and so that a craft could move through it, in that sense they might be right. I really don't know what step is going to happen that will what will occur that will trigger the onset of this type of propulsion system. But there were a few things that they said about computers that would mark the beginning, okay? But what they said about, when are we going to invent a gravity generator, this I don't know.
Back in April, I had contacted a guy who had a radio show, and he went off the market shortly after contacting me, and he was former special ops military, and he was working for one of the defense contractors, and he designed an electromagnetic propulsion concept for outer space travel, and they immediately, they fired him 3 days later and blackballed him from the defense contractor field. And I guess they went and threatened him after we were in contact briefly because his number's no good and I have no way of getting a hold of him on the internet or otherwise.
Right. Well, it was the computer side of the equation that Josh often focused on. He made it very clear that there would have to be a human interface with computers before we would be able to advance enough to make this possible. And so that's what I'm looking for. And at some universities, we're already seeing the beginning of this. There are reports out there.
The Grays, when I saw them, they're biological supercomputers. They pump in heavy metals, diseases, viruses, this radioactive material called plutonium, which I verified is a real radioactive substance. And the reason they're gray is they're creating circuit boards at a nanotechnology level on the proteins and viruses in the cell structure. And they are biological supercomputers. And from what I've been told by other people that have seen some of these quote-unquote extraterrestrials, depending upon how much human DNA they leave, they'll be more human-like. But they're supercomputers, and they cannot think beyond a computer bubble. Like, they cannot create something new that wasn't there before. And this is what I was told, by the scientists. So,
John and Josh never raised it with me. Then they gave no indication they knew anything about any of that.
Well, if they did, like you said, they never
told it to me.
Well, the reason I brought it up is it would go along with the supercomputers that would need to do these incredible things.
Well, they spoke about computers using a diamond-based material to allow them to accelerate to a level that they would be able to interface with the human brain. And so basically what I'm looking for is to see that development in our technology. I haven't seen it yet. There wasn't a lot of elaboration on that. How each race goes through this quantum leap is different. Sometimes it takes you know, 100 years. Sometimes it takes 350 years, but no two cases are the same. And that's why John's here. He's here to see how we do it, how we progress to that level of communication, because once we're there, that's when we will figure out how to use gravity, not just as a propulsion, but as a means of communications. They don't use the electromagnetic spectrum as a means of communications. They use gravity. And once we learn how to do that, we're going to be like plugged in, so to speak, to the rest of the universe, and that'll begin our quantum leap. Thus the name of the book, The Human Quantum Leap.
And he said there was no connection with this John, or any indication of John and Area 51?
Nah, he never raised Area 51 with me whatsoever. I mean, he did tell me about Australia, because that's where he, Josh discovered who and what John was, and apparently there is, or was at one time, a so-called United States territory of Australia, which was created so that the Australians could always claim that there was no nuclear weapons in Australian territory. And it was created after World War II. And I know that on the defense budget there is, a rent payment for territory in Australia, but what the nature of that base might be, I don't know.
Did he describe it as being way out in the middle of the outback?
He described walking around with John out in the middle of nowhere, which apparently John was very fond of doing, taking extraordinary walks, literally in the middle of nowhere, and going on walkabout. And one day they were out on one of these walkabouts, and Josh wasn't paying attention the way he should have, or John was gotten away from him, or whatever the reason was. A wild boar, which are fairly common in Australia, a wild boar showed up and got a hold of John's leg. I don't know if anyone out there has ever seen a wild boar up close, but they're fairly nasty, and they can shred you, literally shred you. And John was down. Josh pulled his weapon and shot the creature dead. And but now John was bleeding, and Josh went up to him, and he realized very quickly that the blood that was coming out of John was black, or at least it appeared black in sunlight. And later we come to find out that John's blood is just so concentrated with red blood cells that the hemoglobin appears black, but what it really is a very deep, deep, dark red.
Well, if you stab somebody in the liver, it's going to come out black.
Okay. Well,
there's possibility.
This was his leg. So, and he, that's how he discovered. But John had to give up who and what he was at that point. There was just there was no point to even hiding it anymore, and. That's how, even though he would never admit it, that's how Josh found out who John was or is.
Did he describe John in any sinister way?
He just said he was very creepy. He was always very creepy. He said, "Talk like Arnold Schwarzenegger, except only worse." And, there was absolutely nothing that he liked about the guy.
Well, it's been my experience. I was raised in a satanic coven and then put into MK Ultra and later Operation Monarch when MK Ultra got canceled, but it's basically the same thing. And they have a plan, and from what I was told and what I saw at Area 51, and if I'm remembering what they said correctly, Satan started cooperating with man and came up with these technologies. And there is going to be a fake UFO invasion of the world in their hopes to get the world to work together. So we are under their one world order control. And it's very satanic. It's very sinister. And for him to describe him as creepy and not liking the man, that just more evidence to the different people I know that have interacted with these things or know people that have interacted with these genetic, I call them androids.
Right. Well, Josh was always pretty adamant that these individuals are here to do no harm. That doing any harm there's just no point to it from their point of view. It doesn't make sense to them, okay? From their point of view, we are extremely primitive. Not just a little primitive, but extremely primitive. And our primitiveness makes us very dangerous. And that is the reason that they will not show themselves
to a
wider audience.
What I saw at Area 51, talking to the Grays or... Some of them would describe the one that was about 6'6", a muscly Nephilim with a football-shaped head. The Grays and the ones that I saw, they eat human flesh. They're ground, raw. And
that's one of the things that John always held against us, that we eat meat. It's not that his race didn't eat meat, it's just they haven't done it for thousands of years, and so the current generation of his people who are living the idea is kind of repulsive, but he did understand that the eating of meat was one of the factors in our development of the human race, the expansion of our brain, so he understood that we did it, but you've got to understand that... they don't think of us in this context, but they are as far above us as we are above chimpanzees in the woodlands, okay? They don't think about us that way, but they're extremely advanced, and they know that we're dangerous. They have experience with underdeveloped races before, and they know what not to do, and they know what to do, and one of the things that they do is to limit their contact, extremely limit their contact. But, we still have borders. Borders don't make any sense to these people. I mean, the people on one side of the border are the same as the people on the other side of the border from their perspective. So a border doesn't make any sense to them. It's the same thing as when a lion goes out into the jungle and is peeing on the bushes, okay? He's marking his territory. And if you cross his territory, he's going to eat you. It's just a type of animal-based paranoia that doesn't make any sense to them anymore. So they see these things and it worries them. And we have wars, okay? And wars don't make any sense to them either. Again, everyone involved in the war is no different than anybody else involved in a war from their perspective. And until we learn to change, and we have to do that on our own, there's no point in expanding contact with the human race.
Well, did he mention anything, does John mention anything about of human abductions, like a lot of people claim to be abducted?
I did raise that. It took a long time for me to raise that. I raised that toward the end with Josh, okay? And he understood my wonderment about that. And at one point, he did bring it up with John. But you have to understand, I asked a question like that at the beginning of the year. You know, I might not hear anything about it until the end of the year, because Josh should only bring up things with John when it was absolutely convenient for him to do so. And John thought it was a very interesting phenomenon, because any of the races he was familiar with could learn everything they wanted to know about any human being from orbit simply by scanning them. So there's no reason to be grabbing people, because whatever they needed to know, they would know. There is an unreasonable possibility, but John had no first-hand knowledge of this type of event going on where one of these races might like to have a copy of your memories and your life experiences, because those life experiences are worth something on the galactic internet, and people like, you know, individuals might like to share in those experiences, your experiences. So he could see somebody very temporarily being put to sleep and having their memories copied and then left to go home or whatever, but he had no first-hand knowledge of that happening, and he saw no particular purpose for people to be abducted.
There was no
scientific purpose to it from John's point of view.
Well, when I was 9 years old, and I didn't remember any, all these are repressed memories that were recovered when I realized I was a mind control victim and so were my family. When I was 9 years old, the head of the coven, now if he's still alive, Major General Creel Helton, Special Ops Advisory, they were doing an alien ceremony on me where they strapped me to a board, inverted me at a 45 degree angle, and were just torturing a little kid. And the women would have full body leotards with the gray aliens on them, and the men would wear glow-in-the-dark alien masks while they're still wearing their satanic habit. And I didn't believe, I thought it was all a CIA hoax, because there's very much devil worship, very much Illuminati, Jesuits, and all this stuff connected with all of it my whole life, and a number of people that I've met which have had similar experiences. Now, and there's different levels. I had a guy on, Victor from Canada, and he knew someone who thought he dreamed about having sex with two beautiful women, and he thought it was a dream, and he woke up with these long hairs around his genital area, and he had it DNA tested, and they says, well, it's somebody that mostly from Mongolia area of the world, but there are DNA strands where they cannot recognize them at all. So, my take on it is, when devil worshippers or Satan comes to approach you, it's like the yin and yang symbol, the white for the good, the black for the evil, but it's both sides, both faces of Satan and his bunch. They'll come and they'll represent, on one side, they're the good, they're the benevolent. And on the other side, no, here comes the evil, when it's all coming from the same source.
Right. Well, it's very hard to understand how, if one of these visitors approached an individual who had a predisposition to be irrational, how they would react to it. It's possible that they would overreact. It's possible that, you know, they may start a cult that has really weird rituals associated with it. But from John's point of view, there was just never any point to it all. He's here just as an observer. There's nothing else to be done here for people who visit from other places other than to observe. The races that John was familiar with would never be interested in coming here in force. First of all, it would require a calculation of such a volume of ships to make it possible that it was unrealistic that they would all make it to begin with. So it's extremely difficult to travel through deep space and between planets, and so that type of invasion becomes unrealistic from the point of view of somebody like John. But to sit here and watch us go through the steps that allowed his race to join the intergalactic community, and to watch it all happen again, now that has a great deal of value to John. And that's basically what he's doing here. And I don't think people really have anything to worry about. These type of satanic events, you know, I suspect that they probably have a more earthly explanation, but I'm not going to pass judgment on them because I simply don't know enough about it.
Well, it's been my experience, and I found out, you know, through sources and so forth, the vast majority of the radio shows that put out alien, UFO, Illuminati, Jesuit, One World Order are their operatives, and they're just putting out information, disinformation. I've had numerous people that I called to try to be guests on my show that claim that, oh, they're all benevolent and they're good for us and all that kind of stuff. These people don't want to touch me with a 10-foot pole because there are so many operatives out there, and that goes with the Planet X routine as well. Did John mention anything about Planet X to Josh?
No, he never mentioned anything about planets. And the only way that he himself contacts, he knows about other races, but the way he knows about it is through this galactic internet. I'm calling it that. That's not what they call it. That's what I call it.
What do they call it?
I'm not sure what they call it. The way they explained it to me, it just seemed that the human race had already made the first step by plugging in what we now call the internet. This ability to have data and information at multiple, like for example, you have a website and you have a picture on your website. Well, that picture it can be called up by somebody in China or somebody in Europe, and they can both be looking at it at the same time, but in more than one place. So you have this multi-dimensional aspect to the internet that makes information existing in multiple places in the same space. And so that's why I started calling it the Galactic Internet, because that's what's going on. You have multiple amounts of information, except now it occurs over an entire universe, or at least a galaxy. I'm not real sure about that, but the point is that the information is available once you learn how to tap into it and are able to read it. And so that, to me, was probably the basis of our internet being plugged in, and we learned how to use the internet physically, analog, I call it, but now we are going to start plugging into that using our brains, which will take it to the next level.
Oh, yeah.
The point is that John knows about other races because of this type of galactic internet, but he's only met maybe two or three of them, because the only way they can meet is on common ground. They can't meet on each other's worlds.
Well, I know over in Japan that some people are having implants put in their heads so that they can play video games with no hands.
Well, they're doing it at MIT, too.
Well, you know, a couple months ago, I met an MIT astronomer at Starbucks, and I started asking about Planet X, and he said a few things and got real nervous and left.
Well, you know, that might just be your personality, Dean, you know.
you might
make people nervous, okay? Maybe you should have just bought him the coffee. Maybe he would have stuck around for longer.
Oh, we were both smoking a cigarette, talking, you know, casual talk about election, whatnot. No, I'm a trained interrogator. I know how to get information just by having a very casual conversation. I mean, they had a CIA hitman on me for 2.5 hours, and I sat there and talked to him. He didn't say much.
Hey, wait, how how does a discussion about Planet X become casual? I'm very curious about that.
Well, I just asked him. I said, as an astronomer, I says, you know, a lot of people, I just says, you know, you look in outer space all the time. He goes, yeah, with the telescope, yeah. I said, is there something they call a Planet X? And he goes, well, yes, there is. And I said, have you seen it? He says, oh, yeah, numerous times. And I said, did you, and I'm talking to him just like this, you know, in my best put on nice guy voice. I asked him, I said, well, is it smooth? He says, well, it's smooth on the side that faces the sun, but we think it's rocky. And before I could ask any other questions, he split. I asked him how big it was. He said it was a little bit bigger than our moon.
Did you take a shower that day?
Say again?
Did you take a shower that day?
Why, what's that got to do with it?
bad breath and body odor. Maybe that drove him off.
No, I took a shower before I went there.
Okay.
Well, you see, my experience has been it's all on the shadow governments of the black ops. You know, that's why somebody like your friend Josh, black ops is very much connected with Area 51. They have one in the middle of Australia. Russia has one. China has one, and I think Europe has one as well. So it's not just the United.
I heard rumors. I don't know that any of them are true. That Area 51 is closed down now. It's got contaminated so bad, and they've had so many lawsuits filed against them that they just closed it down.
Well, the part I'm talking about are the substructures. You know, they have. I was in substructure levels 1.1 to 21.1, so it's on a decimal system. So I would think there are maybe upwards of 10 substructures, and these were a mile diameter round with 21 levels. Underground. How deep they went, I don't know. You know, they may have bigger ones, they may have longer ones. They also have tunnels going all around the world where they can travel in these tunnels. That they can only go one way because of the rotation of the Earth. They have Air Force laser drilling equipment where they can drill 5 miles a day. And they set magnetic rings, electromagnetic rings, and creates a field around a travel vessel, and as the Earth rotates around itself, that vessel stays in one point, and they can stop it and get out.
Josh never raised any of that with me. But I did hear rumors that they finally closed down Area 51, and the reason was contamination and lawsuits.
Yeah, and they stopped using, they stopped work on the Texas Super Collider. And Hubble didn't work for 3 years because they didn't put in the right washer.
Right. So it's hard to tell, but that's why I stick to what it is that Josh shared with me. I don't go off on tangents or anything like that because I simply don't know the answers. And when I don't know an answer, I tell people I don't know.
I would agree with you. That's the way I am. Now, we have about 7 minutes left. In the remaining 7 minutes, what would you like to tell us?
Oh, is there anything particular that interests you?
Well, the scientific side, if there's any more you can elaborate on that.
Oh, none of it's... There's no simple explanations to a great deal of it. Let me see. In the book, there is the Einstein theory that John placed into a question. And I'm sure many people are familiar with this story where Einstein theorized that you have twins, and one twin gets in a spaceship, goes out, accelerates to the speed of light, and then comes back. And his twin is 20 years older than he is. Are you familiar with this?
No, I've just heard something about the time travel and aging.
Well, this was Einstein's explanation of how time travel might happen at the speed of light. And he was simply describing the effect of speed relative to someone on Earth as an observer. So... and relative to the person in the ship of what happens to Earth while he accelerates the speed of light. And John said that this is one of the flaws in human science, because all of our equations include a time factor. Even the most famous of them all, E equals MC square, the C in it is a time factor. And there's no such thing as time. It does not exist. It is an emergent property of gravity. And so long as we keep time as a factor in our equations, then we're not going to figure out the true nature of the universe. And this experiment that Einstein elaborated on is what John used as an example, because he said once that twin landed back on Earth, if you measured the expansion of the universe at that particular point, the expansion was the same for both individuals. And even though that other twin had accelerated the speed of light, he had experienced, even at that speed, the same measure of expansion of the universe as his twin did. And this is the paradox that a person in three-dimensional space has as they look out across the universe. They see, or even into the sciences like electromagnetic, the weak force, the strong force, the electromagnetic force, they have only a three-dimensional perspective on this, because they live on a three-dimensional world and they have a three-dimensional mind. The idea that all of these events are actually emergent properties of gravity isn't something that they can yet fathom. But the bottom line was that there are four dimensions, there are only four dimensions, and no amount of really fancy math, from John's point of view, is going to change that. There is the first dimension, that is gravity, and then there's two, three, and four that we live in. And if we were able to have a craft that could go out to the event horizon of the expansion of the universe, if we were able to pass beyond that barrier, then we would disintegrate, because there wouldn't be anything holding us together anymore. Everything that we know about the universe is the end result of gravity, and that's why, from a person's perspective in 3D, why gravity appears to be the weakest of the forces instead of the strongest, because it's responsible for everything else.
I got one real big question to ask about John. Did he give any alien pickup lines on how to pick up good-looking chicks?
Nah. I don't think he had a normal conversation with Josh ever. You know,
did John ever have relations with women that Josh was aware of?
Nah. He really wasn't interested in that kind of stuff. Okay, he spent nearly one third of his time in a special environment that was constructed for him to go into. I don't know if we constructed it or he constructed it, but he would spend about a third of his time in there, and he would spend the other two thirds out wandering until there was something going on that either drew his attention or needed his attention, or somebody had a question for him. But they worked together for a long time. So, I was always frustrated with the fact that John didn't intervene in Josh's disease to save him.
Why don't you give us your contact information? We only have about a minute left on how to contact you and your book.
Oh, it's AJENSR. That's AJENSR at AOL.com. And, the website is www.gohumanleap.com.
And how much does your book cost?
$12.
$12.
Amazon will deliver it to you, and it, depending on how much postage you want to pay, anywhere from 24 to 72 hours. Anywhere in the world.
And how long did it take you to write this book?
Well, it took me 4 months for the whole thing to put it down, and then I wrote the last chapter, and it took me 10 days to write the last chapter and 3 months to edit it. So we're talking about a window of about 9 months.
Well, we're at the end of our program now, and I want to thank you, AJ, for coming on. If anybody wishes to email me, you may email me at Eugene B. Colson, UGENEBCULSON at yahoo.com. And I want to thank you very much for coming on the show, AJ, and maybe we'll have you back again sometime soon.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much.
All right. You have a good day. And this is Eugene B. Colson on Mind Controlled America on the VBS Internet Radio Station, signing off. Have a good day.